Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Dorney's Vinyl. This is episode number 31 of season 6, so we have officially reached the fourth quarter of season 6. I want to thank you guys all for tuning into this week's episode. If you're returning, thank you. If you're new, thank you. But if you are new to this podcast, this is a weekly podcast. So my odd-numbered podcasts, such as this one, are album reviews. 2 weeks ago, the album review that I did was Jackson Browne's album, The Pretender. And every even-numbered podcast is what I call an EP extra podcast. Half of those are games guest starring my wife. Last week, we did a game of Before and Afters, based off of songs from records from my record collection. And the other half of the EPs are just little tidbits of information. So a few weeks ago, I did a little segment that I call Hall of Shame, in which I take a band, in this case Foreigner, and talk about why I think they should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and how it's a disgrace that they are not in already. Luckily, though, this year Foreigner is is one of the nominees that could be inducted. If they aren't inducted in, I might throw a fit. But anyway, this is an album review, and the album that I'm reviewing is Aerosmith's Toys in the Attic. This is the second Aerosmith podcast that I am doing in Dorney's Vinyl. Back in season 3, I did Aerosmith Rocks. How I do my album podcasts is I talk a little bit about the band or the artist, I talk about the album, talk about the personnel, and then run through the tracks. I take a short little break, that's what I call that halftime, and then the second half of the podcast is my song rankings and my album score, song opinion and album score. So let's get into today's podcast. So Aerosmith, they formed in Boston, Massachusetts in 1970, and they have been active since 1970, so they are going on to 54 years. The main members include Steven Tyler, Joe Perry, Tom Hamilton, Joey Kramer, and Brad Whitford. They have sold over 150 million records worldwide. They hold the record for the most album certifications by an American group, with 25 gold albums, 18 platinum, and 12 multi-platinum albums. They have been nominated for 14 Grammy Awards, winning 4 of them. And they were inducted to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2001. They have released 15 studio albums and 72 singles. Of their albums on the U.S. Billboard 200, they've had 14 top 40 albums, 7 top 10s, and 2 number 1s. And on the U.K. albums chart, they had 7 top 40 albums and 4 top 10s. Of their singles, then, on the U.S. Hot 100, they've had 21 top 40 singles, 7 top 10s, and 1 number 1. And on the U.K. singles chart, they've had 13 top 40 singles and 1 top 10. So they are significantly more popular in the United States than the U.K. Moving on now into the album. So Toys in the Attic is the third album released by Aerosmith. So Aerosmith released their second album on March 15th, 1974. And that was their first album working with producer Jack Douglas. So about writing for their third album, guitarist Joe Perry said in his autobiography, quote, and I will preface this by saying, though, I will use a lot of quotes, and I like using quotes because I like when you hear it straight from the artist as opposed to me just trying to summarize what they actually said. But Joe Perry said, quote, our first two albums were basically comprised of songs we'd been playing for years live in the clubs. With Toys, we started from scratch. Making this record, we learned to be recording artists and write songs on a deadline. In the process, we began to see just what Aerosmith could accomplish. With everyone throwing ideas, Toys was our breakthrough. That breakthrough was facilitated by Jack Douglas, and continues, in the studio, he moved into the slot of the sixth member of the band, end quote. And about writing the songs, Douglas said, quote, Steven was a tormented lyricist, a brilliant lyricist, but absolutely tormented, and as time went on, he became more and more tormented to come up with lyrics. The band, and particularly Joe, could just rip out these great riffs. Steven was a brilliant lyricist, and funny, and self-deprecating, and aware of what was going on in the world, and what was going on in the streets. But he had set a bar for himself that was so high that it was really difficult for him. End quote. So Douglas also booked recording studio for the band at the Record Plant in New York City, and that's when they used their time to work on their songs and create new ones. Toys in the Attic was released on April 8, 1975, and it peaked at number 11 in the U.S. Reviews of the album are pretty positive. So Robert Christgau graded it a B+, which is pretty good score for Robert Christgau. And he wrote, quote, too bad the two real whompers are attached to rock star lyrics, albeit clever ones. because Steve Tyler has a gift for the dirty line as well as the dirty look. Anybody who can hook a song called Adam's Apple around the phrase Love at First Bite deserves to rehabilitate a blue blues like Big 10-inch record, end quote. And Stephen Thomas Erlewine of AllMusic rated it 5 out of 5 stars, writing retrospectively, quote, Aerosmith finally perfected their mix of Stonesy raunch and Zeppelin-esque riffing with their third album, Toys in the Attic. The success of the album derives from a combination of an increased sense of songwriting skills and purpose. And he later continues, Aerosmith was a gritty, streetwise hard rock band who played their blues as blues and were in it for a good time. Toys in the Attic crystallizes that attitude, end quote. And the album certified 9 times platinum in the U.S. with 9 million copies sold. It ranked number 228 on Rolling Stone's 2003 list of the 500 greatest albums of all time. And it is included in the book 1001 Albums to Listen to Before You Die. Moving on into the personnel for the album. So Aerosmith, Steven Tyler on vocals, keyboards, harmonica, and percussion. Joe Perry on lead guitar, rhythm guitar on track 8, acoustic guitar, slide guitar, talk box on track 6, backing vocals and percussion. Brad Whitford on rhythm guitar and lead guitar on track 8. Tom Hamilton on bass guitar and rhythm guitar on track 2. And Joey Kramer on drums and percussion. Other personnel for the album include Scott Cushney on piano on tracks 5 and 7. Jay Messina doing the bass marimba on track 6. Mike Manieri, the orchestra conductor on track 9. And uncredited horns on tracks 3 and 5. And the album was produced by Jack Douglas. Moving on now into the track listing. So track 1 is Toys in the Attic. It was written by Steven Tyler and Joe Perry. About writing the song, Perry said, quote, Jack Douglas said, we need one more rocker. And I sat on an amp and just started playing a riff. It was the riff to the song, Toys in the Attic, end quote. And Tyler said, quote, Joe was jamming a riff and I started yelling, toys, toys, toys. Organic, immediate, infectious. I just started singing and it fit like chocolate and peanut butter. Joe plays his ass off on that song, end quote. And this song is part of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame's 500 songs that shaped rock and roll. And the song was covered by R.E.M. Track 2 is Uncle Salty, which was written by Tyler and Tom Hamilton. Hamilton came up with the riff of the song, and he said, quote, I came up with it within the first year the band was together. Then we didn't use it until a third album. That's typical with me. I'll come up with a musical idea and be very reluctant to show it to people, end quote. And about the lyrics, Tyler said, quote, Here I was thinking about an orphanage when I wrote those lyrics. I try to make the melody weep from the sadness felt when a child is abandoned, end quote. Track 3 is Adam's Apple. It was written by Tyler. And in an interview, Tyler said, quote, I don't remember anything except I arranged it and must have fought for credit. And I originally wanted to call the album Love at First Bite after the line in the song, end quote. Track 4 is Walk This Way. It was written by Tyler and Perry. It was released as the second single off of the album, peaking at number 10 in the U.S. So Perry came up with the riffs for the song while the band was opening for the Guess Who in Honolulu. When Tyler heard the riff, he ran to the drums and sang, quote, nonsensical words initially to feel where the lyrics should go before adding them later, end quote. The band came back to the song while in the recording studio. Tyler wrote lyrics for the song in the hotel at night, but he left them in the cab on the way back to the studio the next morning, so he had to rewrite them. He wrote them on the walls of the record plant's top floor because he initially forgot to take paper with him, but he ran back to grab a notepad to copy them down. In Cashbox Magazine's review of the song reads, quote, Steven Tyler's vocal is aggressive, gritty, and right on as he literally spits out a slew of lyrics while never losing clarity. The music itself is hard-boiled rock, end quote. Track 5 is Big 10-inch Record. It was written by Fred Wisemantle. It was originally recorded by Bull Moose Jackson in 1952. Tyler said that they originally heard the song while listening to a tape recording of Dr. Demento's radio show. If you're unfamiliar with Dr. Demento, so am I, other than the fact that I know that he was a big mentor to Weird Al Yankovic. Brad Whitford explained about the song, quote, We heard the original and played it for laughs. We played it for our producer and he said, let's do it. Not only that, let's do it like they did it then, with the horns and everything. We thought, hey, that might be a good idea. End quote. Track 6 is Sweet Emotion. It was written by Tyler and Hamilton. It was released as the first single off of the album, peaking at number 36 in the US. About the music, Hamilton said, quote, I wrote that line on bass and realized I should think of some guitar parts for it if I was ever going to get a chance to present it to the band. I didn't think I ever would. But it was at the end of the recording, and Jack said, tomorrow's jam day, if anybody's got a stray riff hanging around. I said, yeah, I do. So I spent the day showing everybody everything, and we took it from there, refining it into what it is, end quote. And about the lyrics, Tyler said, quote, a lot of stuff I wrote in the old days just came out of anger. Sweet Emotion was about how pissed off I was at Joe's ex-wife, and all the other frustrations at the time. I could never get through to him, end quote. And Cashbox Magazine's review reads, quote, rock and roll. Aerosmith explodes with inspired harmony, virtuosity in some searing guitar licks, and powerful production by Jack Douglas. Should figure heavily in this important group's growth. End quote. And Rolling Stone magazine ranked the song number 416 on their 2004 list of the 500 greatest songs of all time. Track 7 is No More, No More, which was written by Tyler and Perry. Tyler has said that he was inspired to write the song by, quote, life on the road, boredom, disillusion, holiday inn, stalemate, jailbait, my diary, end quote. Track 8 is Round and Round, which was written by Tyler and Brad Whitford. And track 9 is You See Me Crying, which was written by Tyler and Don Solomon. It was released as the third single off of the album. During recording, some of the band members became frustrated with the song due to the many complex drum and guitar parts, as well as the piano and orchestra. But Cashbox Magazine's review reads, quote, Steven Tyler, who sounds as if he's been gargling a paint thinner, coughs up a rock ballad sure to raise nodules on your turntable. Heavy metal enthusiasts will appreciate the large-scale production as Aerosmith sounds like five major symphony orchestras all playing different songs. Don't knock it. This stuff draws kids like moths to the flame, end quote. So that concludes the informational half of today's podcast. I'm going to take a short break and come back with my song rankings, my song opinions, and my album score, so stay tuned. All right, I am back after that short little intermission there, that little 5-second break, to give you guys my song rankings, my song opinions, and my album score. So essentially how I work this part of the podcast is I listen to the album from start to finish, put it on my turntable, my record player, and as I'm going through, I am listening and I'm just writing down little notes about each song. At the end of the album, I then go back and rank my favorite songs. So this ranking will be my least favorite to my favorite. So at number 9, I have Uncle Salty. For this song, I liked the guitar notes at the beginning of the song. I think Tyler's vocals get stronger on later albums by Aerosmith. In this song, it sounded like he was still trying to find it. There was a nice scream by Tyler after the second verse of the song, but I really liked kind of the vocal tone shift on the bridge for the song. It kind of sounded like airy and almost fantasy-like. There was another great wow factor riff after the bridge for this song, and it just seemed like it was cut a little too short, though. I don't mind that the end of this song just kept repeating, but I feel like they could have used that time for a better riff. And my favorite lyrics for this song, Uncle Salty told me when she was a baby that she'd get by and maybe someday she'd see, but soon she found her mother's love for all the others, the pushers and the shovers was the life to lead. At number 8, I have No More, No More. I like how the guitar in the introduction of this song seems to be at like a higher pitch compared to the rest of the album. I really liked Tyler's vocals on this song. I feel like I can really understand what he's saying, even with the backing instrumentals for the song at like volume 11. I liked the bridge to this song. I was really catching the Who vibes during this part of the song too. Like it really sounded like the Who. This was another song that had a really solid wow factor riff. And I will say all of the wow factor riffs on this album sounded differently. They're like snowflakes. Each one is unique in its own way. I also like how they put their lengthy riffs at the end of the songs so that they have the time to really play them out. They don't put it in like the 2/3 mark like a lot of other bands do. And my favorite lyrics for this one, blood stains the ivories of my daddy's baby grand. I ain't seen no daylight since we started this band. At number 7, I have Adam's Apple. This was another strong start to the song. And I'm really, like, I'm not used to the hard rock guitar, considering the past albums that I've done podcasts on. I mean, Jackson Browne didn't have that. The Mamas and the Papas definitely didn't have that. Bonnie Tyler didn't have that. Moody Blues didn't have that. Maybe Tommy had it. But really, like, nothing in the past few albums. This was a very pretty, there were very pretty cheeky lyrics from Tyler. And Tyler's vocals are stronger on this song than the previous two. I like how the riff at the two-thirds mark sounds different than the guitar that was being played throughout the rest of the song. It's also a very unique part of the song. It's not just the guitar playing with no lyrics. I also like how they finally let this guitar riff go for a decent amount of time. I feel like it's close to like being like almost a minute long, and it has a couple different moving parts to it. My favorite lyrics were, "Even Eve and Eden, voices tried deceiving, with lies to show the lady the way." At number 6, I have You See Me Crying. For how hard rock the rest of this album it was, I was surprised to hear a piano introduction, even for the final song. I'm a huge stickler for what my final songs on albums sound like, and this one was interesting, and even though all the other instruments do have come in eventually. I like Tyler's vocals on the slower, quote-unquote slower songs on the album. They aren't his most refined, but they just sound real, and I like real vocals. I appreciate that this song has an orchestral sound to it, but it doesn't really fit, and it makes the song sound like a bit too cluttered. It's hard to really compare this to something else, because I don't know if there's anything else out there that's similar to compare this song to. I like the wow factor riff for this one because it's more controlled than most of the riffs on the other songs. It just fit well with the pace of this song. I like the song, you know, the song had like a false ending to it, and how it really built up to like a peak, followed by just like a sigh, and then the calm piano and guitar. My favorite lyrics for this one, "You see me crying, please say you'll stick around, and I got to be your lover, honey, let me take you to town." At number 5, I have Round and Round. I like the build-up at the beginning of the song. It didn't fully go where I thought it was going to go, but I honestly like the way that it went better than in my head how it was going to go. This is probably the more unique backing instrumentals of all of the songs on the album. It just had a different vibe to it. I really couldn't explain using good, better words. Just a different vibe. I like how this song has a wow factor riff like in the middle. It just fits well. And it was a pretty good length of a wow factor riff too. It's very impressive how many times that Tyler was able to say round and round in a row. Like I don't know if I would be able to say it more than like 3 times, but he just banged it out. The guitar during this time is also equally impressive, and eerie, and captivating, and so many other words. My favorite lyrics for this one, "Now all of the changes, ain't nothing the same, I'm having the strangest feeling lately, I can't remember my name." At number 4, I have Big 10-inch Record. I liked the change of tone on the first side of the album. They went full jazz mixed with hard rock, and it came out very well on this song. This is just another song with cheeky lyrics, so it just fits in well with the Aerosmith written songs, because this is a cover. I'm interested to see what they pull out in the instrumental, and the instrumental had good guitars, a very, very well-played piano through though that almost steals the show. I would have liked for the riff on this song to be a little bit longer, though. Tyler's vocal has a very interesting sound to it on this song, unless that was my speakers being strange. I don't think it was. And my favorite lyrics for this one, "Last night I tried to tease her, I gave my love a little pinch. She said, now stop that jiving, now whip out your big 10-inch record of a band that plays the blues." At number 3, I have Toys in the Attic. I just said, wow, like what a start to an album. I thought it was going to be slow with like how kind of the cymbals started, but I was just way off. The opening vocals for this song sounded almost like Ozzy Osbourne-esque. And quite frankly, the whole song does, as a matter of fact. Kind of, I'm wondering if they got, if they were inspired by Black Sabbath. This was a very simple song lyrically, but what a guitar riff in the middle of the song. Like, definitely a wow factor riff. It's been a while since I've had, like, wow factor riffs on an entire album like this, and they just were great. The bass was also noticeable for me on the riff. And I think that it complemented everything very well. I can tell just by this song that we are going to be in for a hard rocking album. It definitely set the pace. And my favorite lyrics for this one, leaving the things that are real behind, leaving the things that you love from mind, all of the things that you learned from fears, nothing is left for the years. At number two, I have Sweet Emotion. I like the sound of the introduction to this song. It had a very unique instruments with just some kind of like feedbacky feel to it. The lyrics for this song are both complex but simple at the same time. It kind of sounded like the guitar was getting increasingly louder as the song kept playing. And whether that's an illusion or not, they did a really good job. This song kind of sounds like the record is being skipped in the background during some of the short instrumental breaks while still being so smooth. The chorus sounds so pure, but then the regular lyrics are just like rough and tough. I liked the false ending and the transition into a riff that just had a very different tone and tempo to it. It could, quite frankly, be part of a different song. It just is very wow factor-esque, though. And my favorite lyrics for this one, talk about things that nobody cares, wearing other things that nobody wears. You're calling my name, but I gotta make it clear. I can't say, baby, where I'll be in a year. And at number one, Walk This Way. This song is definitely recognized by the first 2 seconds. I think every album has a song like that. This is definitely one of those. I really liked Tyler's rapid-fire lyrics on this one. And I also really like how the guitar is able to keep up with him while not totally overpowering him. The instrumental on this song was placed at a really good spot as well. It also wasn't long, but I feel like the length was perfect with the pace of the song. Sometimes a quicker song just needs a quicker riff. I like how this song ends. It almost has the same riff as the beginning of the song, with just some stray guitar notes thrown into it, until an electric wow factor riff at the end of the song that lasts about like a minute. And my favorite lyrics, so I took a big chance at the high school dance with a missy who was ready to play. Was it me she was fooling because she knew what she was doing when she told me how to walk this way? And that is the conclusion then of my song rankings and my song opinions. So I'm going to go into my album score. So how I do the album score is I give it a score out of 10 based off of lyrics, vocals, and instrumentals in my opinion. So lyrically, I gave this one an 8 out of 10. And the songs that I pointed to lyrically were Uncle Salty, Walk This Way, and Sweet Emotion. Vocally, I gave this one an 8.5 out of 10, pointing to Adam's Apple, No More, No More, and You See Me Crying. And instrumentally, I gave this one a 9 out of 10, pointing to Toys in the Attic, Big 10-inch Record, and Round and Round. So those three scores will get multiplied by 2 to go into the total score. Those three categories are what I call my Dorney score. I then give it a score out of 10 based off of where it charted in the US and the UK. In the US, it peaked at number 11, so that earned 6 out of 10 points. And in the UK, it did not chart in the top 100, so it got 0 points. I also give it a score out of 10 based off of where its singles charted in the US. So it had a number 10 single and a number 36 single. For the number 10, it got 3 points. For the number 36, it got 1 point. So it got a total of 4 out of 10 points, and it can only max out at 10 points. This one got a 4 out of 10 points. And then I give it a score based off of its album cover. I really like this album cover. You know, it's essentially just a bunch of toys that look like they've come to life and are flowing out of the toy box. So I gave this one a 9.5 out of 10. So the total score for Aerosmith's Toys in the Attic is a 70.5 out of 100. Whether or not that's a solid score, we will have to see in the season finale, which will be in a little bit over 2 months. I want to thank you guys so much for tuning into this week's episode. That's all I got for today's podcast. However, if you're not already, please go follow me on Instagram at Dorney's Vinyl. That is where in the summer I post polls, but I also post the podcast schedule and when podcasts get released, even though they get released every Monday at 12 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. But I also post some things on my Instagram at Dorney's Vinyl. Also, if you're interested in either growing, starting, doing anything with your used record collection, I have 33s and 45s for sale on my eBay store, which is Dorney's Vinyl. You can go ahead and check that out, DorneysVinyl. That's on eBay, no spaces, no punctuation, no capitalization. And next week's podcast is going to be, it's an EP, an extra podcast. I'm going to do some book reviews. I have 4 books, I think, that I have read recently. I read a lot of artist biographies and autobiographies and things like that. So I really like the nonfiction books. So I'm going to just talk a little bit about some of them. That'll be next week's episode, so I will talk to you all then.